I am blessed as a son of God, okay. Which was a little challenging for me because I am, well, first of all, I kept saying child of God because I have a hard time thinking of myself as a son of God. And then it was like, I'm happy, peaceful, loving, and contented. And it was weird to say those things even if I didn't feel them. Mm-hmm. It was weird to say that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I did it all day, and then towards the end of the day, I actually started to like feel it a little when I said it. So maybe that's the idea.
That is the idea. You fought your ego all day. You listened to both. Listened to your ego, and then you listened to the course. You did both. And then your ego got tired. But you still did the course.
Yeah.
That's what happens to me when I build lessons, too. I think, wow, this is a good lesson. Like, it's nice. It's okay. And usually around 6 o'clock, 4 to 6 o'clock, somewhere in there, it's like, whoa, I get it.
Yeah.
Because someone comes right through. It's very common. Even after all the years I've studied it.
Yeah.
Even now, the big message comes through. I guess when my ego's worn down or something later in the day and after I've done it, you know, 67 times.
Right.
And then, you know, those are little awakenings. Those are spiritual awakenings. And then nobody can take that away from you.
Yeah.
Okay, so we can't avoid this.
Hey.
Welcome to Course in Miracles. And how do people in general feel about Jesus? Just so I know who showed up to the meeting and what the course would say to you. There's this character Jesus that's in this book. Not the same Jesus that I learned about, but nonetheless, it's in this historical character's name is in this book. So, maybe that's what we'll do for the meditation. And we'll just get an opinion. Go around the room and we'll get an opinion on what the heck that is or means. And please feel free. Nobody's going to judge you. You will hear some amazing support and denial and who cares as we go around the room, for sure. But it's just a chance for you. If there's anything there tonight, what is it? Because it's in this book. I mean, even Helen, who's the woman who took down the notes, she said she saw it more than she heard it. It wasn't really a voice over her shoulder kind of thing. She said there's very few times you would actually see a word or two. She had a problem with a word in the scribing and wasn't sure. She could close her eyes and a chalkboard would show up in her mind. And she would see the word on the chalkboard. Oh, that's what you mean.
How long did it take her to do all this with her partner, her scribe?
It took her 7 years, and she heard it. She would go to sleep. She'd light a cigarette and go to sleep, and she would start writing. She'd writing, and then she'd be, oh, I'm done, I'm tired. She'd go to sleep, and she'd wake up the next morning, grab her notebook, get in the cab, and she'd hear some more. And she would just pick up mid-sentence from where she previous night, just keep writing whatever she heard. And fold it up. She would get to work, sit with Bill, her boss, and he'd agreed to type whatever she heard. And they would get together before work, early an hour before work. So they'd go through the notes, get them down, and type the whole thing in. That's a big fat thing you saw at the intensive. It's the Urtex. That's the original. What came out of Helen is essentially in that. It's the first typing. It's 48,000 more words than what we have here. You don't need to read that thing. It's only for people who are just so excited about it that you want more. But it's not really, it's just more the same. So nobody, you don't have to, $60 you don't have to spend. You know, the message is in this book. It's so many places over and over. It's just fine the way it is. You got what you need. But nonetheless, 7 years. Yeah. She threw it away at one point. She said, that's it. This is too difficult. This is disturbing my life. I don't even understand it. And she took the notebooks and she threw them in the garbage. When she was working on that one, it threw them in the garbage. She got home and said, well, that's over. And she said, oh, no, I guess not. I called Bill. Bill did something very bad. And they dumpster dived, and they found them in the dumpster right down in the back of, you know, the University of Oxford.
Columbia
University, yeah. Physicians and surgeons, big, massive facility. That's where the...
Well, good thing she didn't have a paper shredder.
Good thing. Yeah. He just would have said, we're backing up, and would have kept coming.
Yeah.
So Jesus didn't say, hey, wait a minute to her?
Oh, yeah. No, Helen was very much...
No, I mean, after she was dumping it, he wasn't talking to her, saying...
Oh, right. He listened, copped some attitude with her? Yeah.
It would have been fate. We would have went to a dictaphone. Yeah. It would have been preordained.
Right. Yeah, so I'm pretty curious. So there is this... it's only mentioned in the book 12 times. That name.
What?
Jesus.
Only
12 times?
The name is only...
The actual name.
The actual name, J-E.
Says the is Son of the, God lots of times, right?
Yeah. Son of God now is that inclusive word of you and you know, the one Son of God, mm-hmm. of which Jesus is, and you are too, equally. Right. The real you.
Right.
So that's like, that's that. But, or I should say, and, in the text... The word I shows up in the text. He says, you know, I'm your brother, he says. He says, I've come to tell you about, talk to you about your special relationships. I have written this. I was on the cross. That I is Jesus in the first person. And it's in here 5,700 times. More than any other reference. Because, he, you know, ostensibly... Whatever Jesus is the author of this book. Yeah. Helen says, I didn't write it. So my name's not on the cover because I didn't write it.
She's right, then she and Bill.
Well, Bill typed it in. Bill says he had nothing to do with it, but type it in. He helped edit it. However, as you will see in the text, his name comes up often. Mm-hmm. It's like it was written for him. To him. And Helen brought special messages to Bill from Jesus. Bill was a very much a struggling man. He was a gay man at a time when that wasn't cool. On the side of the country, it was less cool. And he needed a little advice here and there. And he got it. It's kind of sweet.
It's kind of similar to Seth Speaks in a way.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the source is, I mean, it comes speaking through her.
Right? Yeah, it comes speaking through her. Yeah. And she cannot claim to be the author because she didn't understand it when it came out. She says, I don't understand it, but I do believe it's true. She, you know, very smart woman, you know, at least one PhD, you know, and she understands English. So she read the course. But to her, it's an amazing, this is an amazing, amazing thing that came through her. And she knows it's true in her heart. And she's overwhelmed by the clarity of the messages. And she said that if there's one mistake in here, I'm done. If there's one logical disconnect, I am done.
No pressure.
No pressure, Jesus! Yeah,
but in the end, she didn't. She said it wasn't her path. So
yeah,
I find that very interesting.
Isn't it?
In some ways, ego-wise, like allows me to accept it even more because it wasn't like some proselytizer trying to convert everyone. It was like I just received this, and in the end, I couldn't even totally, you know, grab onto it.
Yeah, she didn't want to. She didn't want
to. That's bizarre. That's like a twist.
Isn't it?
That is a twist. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a big burden in her life. She felt in her heart that it was true. And then she asked at one point, why me? It's so difficult. I mean, it would be, of course, all this coming through. And she was a grammar, you know, she's very much into grammar and proper English. And so she would try to change a sentence in here, flip a word. And then Jesus will come back and say, by the way, now let's go back and fix what you changed yesterday. very, very headstrong. She thought that every paragraph should have 10 sentences.
What?
That's just how it should be.
Jeez.
I said, Helen, a very headstrong, you know, structured woman. Hard to work with, so the people say who worked with her. One of them wrote a book about her.
I wanted to be one of my teachers.
Yeah, she was tough, but
well, so what
smart.
Happened to her after she finished writing the book? What did she do?
She tried to go off into obscurity and just distance herself from it. They put it in a file cabinet. First thing they did is just locked it in the file cabinet because it was at work on Columbia University property, and they thought that their jobs would be at stake if somebody knew what they'd just been doing. And then they decided after some time to show it to just a few select people, and those people gave her very clear feedback that this is not to be kept in that drawer. This is not, you know. And she said, well, maybe you're right, okay. And so it slowly came out of the drawer. They retyped it again. She thought, well, if we're going to do it, let's do it right. And they began to edit some things down and get the personal things about her elevator ride and her green stockings and sex and Freud and Bill out of there. And but now there were these photocopies that started moving around the country here and there, and she was getting direct questions that she thought were very good questions. She said, Jesus, why? What about this? And so the psychotherapists were eating it up. And she was a psychotherapist. Bill, a psychotherapist. And so she was eating this or giving it to those people, and they were coming back with very, she thought, good questions. She couldn't answer. She says, well, I don't know. Why am I trying even? I'm not even going to try to answer. I don't understand. I don't know. So she would just take their questions, and out came the pamphlets. Jesus says, I'm back. Take some more notes. And out came a pamphlet on psychotherapy. And so that's the first pamphlet, psychotherapy, purpose, process, and practice. And if anybody here is a psychotherapist,
Helen is. Yeah.
Yeah. It is in your face as a profession. All of us are psychotherapists, it says, to some degree. Of course, there's the profession. It talks about charging people, about working with people, about, you know, you teaching them versus them teaching. It's all the stuff that psychotherapy is covered in just 80 pages. But it, and I thought it was so bold because, I mean, I was talking to a professional about their work. But I think it's super clear, too. I think it's a huge gift. Did you find it a gift?
I haven't read it yet, believe it or not.
Okay, well, I have it on audio if you want to listen, too.
That might be nice.
Yeah, I'll read it for you. Yeah. It's really amazing. Yeah, for you. I think you'll find it.
I'm trying to get through the teacher manual part before I get to
Yes.
I'm almost through with that part.
Good, good. So then came the second pamphlet, and that's called the Song of Prayer. Song of Prayer covers three topics very specifically. Prayer, forgiveness, and healing. That's actually forgiveness, healing, and prayer, I think, in that order. And it just says what the ego thinks prayer is, and then it says what the Course in Miracles says prayer is. Ego thinks forgiveness is, what Course in Miracles says forgiveness is. It's very pithy. And so in the third edition, if you have that version of the book, it's in there. All of it.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. If you see on the cover, if it says supplements on the front,
yeah.
You got it. It's sitting in there ready for you to read.
I have that. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Huh. And so you've got that, jump right in. Don't hesitate. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. And it's only 100 pages. You know. But that's what happened to Helen after, is those came through. And then that was it. Mm-hmm. Never again. She thought for a brief time that since she was connected, and she had just gone so intimately over this again and again and again, as typing it, retyping it, hearing it, that she thought maybe she had a responsibility to help people. Starting to weigh on her a little bit. Because she knew the truth of it. And it has filled up her heart, all right. She just didn't want it in her mind. So that was a short, short time. And she actually did a radio interview. One. She says, you may not play my voice. She says, I'm uncomfortable with this. You can take notes and write a magazine article. Not, you can't put this on. So, but it was recorded. I have it. I'll have to play it for you. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
It was lost because the guy died who did it, and they thought, well, there goes that. And then his kids found some tape, and they had, hey, and sent it to the Foundation of Inner Peace and said, hey, do you guys want this? Want this? Oh, cassette tape, you know. That's it. You know, that was the end of Helen. She just went off into a quiet life after that.
Wow.
having had an interaction with Jesus, she says, it's Jesus. I don't even believe in Jesus, and it's Jesus. She's a good Jew. But she did love the Bible. She says, and why do you like the Bible if you're a Jew? She says, well, it's an amazingly written document. It's a beautiful document. And she had read it. She says, I don't believe, that's just a document. But it's pretty amazing. She had visions, very deep visions, before the Course came through her. And that some of that was a preparation, I think, for what she was about to get hit with. Things she couldn't explain. And I won't take it in more than a meeting, but I could tell you stories that are so interesting about the things she saw. And then it came true, and it happened. And it's all fun stuff, but the bottom line is, she was very convinced it was Jesus. And even being a Catholic, and then I went to Protestant in my own life, I thought the Catholic thing was just too rigid and rules-based and all that. But I liked the Protestant. It was a little looser, more current, applying the teachings of Christ to that. And then, when I got to this, I was uncomfortable with this Jesus thing. I didn't like it shoved down my throat ever since I was a kid. I just hadn't discovered Jesus. Did you find it?
I have a Kenneth Wampnick.
Yes.
And there's a woman on there, and I thought it was Helen that speaks with him at some point. And I thought it was her, but maybe it's not. She sounds Jewish. And
that would be Judith Scutch, then.
It's probably Judith Scutch, yeah.
That's what I was looking at. How rude of me.
No problem. It's kind of fun to look into all this. Especially when you find out that you can take Helen out of the equation entirely, as Julie just did. She says, and you did. She's like, it's kind of weird. She wouldn't know. And same with Gary Renard. Gary Renard does not pretend to be a sage nor a saint. He just knows what he knows. And it's pretty darn cool. And he has a lot of hope behind it for his own life, and it's worked. That's what you get. Very simple. Great messenger, because it's not the message that he's trying to give, from himself. He's just giving what he heard. He's not trying to make up the message. Passing through what he heard. Helen passed through what she heard. Another one is John Mark Hammer. And he could do it too. And I know somebody personally, very personally, who spent a lot of time with him. And when he wasn't sitting in a satsang situation, he was not the nicest person to be around. And she felt uncomfortable and inappropriately treated, etc., etc., etc. Like many gurus, right? Of the East, when they're on. And when Jesus was whispering through John Mark Hammer, he was on. So despite the inappropriate things that happened to my friend with him, she'd still pay the money and go sit with him so she could hear him on. Just shows you how the truth, the Spirit, the Holy Spirit, is not, it is a different voice than the ego.
Well, I mean, that's the rationalization that women use when they're, for putting up with all the crap that they've been doing I'm getting all this out of it.
Well,
so I'm willing to overlook this other thing.
You bet. I think you missed it, but we spent 2-3 months on the attraction of guilt.
Huh?
And right. You bet that ties
right.
Into
no,
what
I was,
you
I was, yeah.
Are you ready for that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that ties directly into what you just said.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, it does. So what of this Jesus character? You don't have to believe it at all. It doesn't it's no requirement to have the benefit of Course in Miracles bring you to enlightenment that the word Jesus is in there. It's an amazing thing. It doesn't matter. Because when miracles are done, they're not even done by Jesus. They're done by love. And I think you'll take credit for having some love in you. And that's the source of miracles. We got all these words we put around it because the separated mind needs that structure to move. It's a bridge for us to move us from so lost to actually being found where we are. Already in love? Wow. We're going to need some massaging to do that. And this is the form it took for me. So anyway, let's just spend a few minutes, and we'll just sit with this idea of Jesus.
Then go with the crack pipe.
Yeah.
That's just looks like a crack pipe to me, dude.
Is it really?
Oh, no.
Oh. He's going to compare it to the crack pipe in his pocket. Yeah. Oh. No, I get it.
Can't get over that.
That right? That right?
Careful you burn your fingers holding it like that. On that note.
What of Jesus? What does Jesus mean to you personally? And I've said you can't say anything wrong here, because it doesn't matter. Jesus doesn't matter with what the message is in this book. But oh my God, if it does matter, is Jesus the face that we put on love in human form? Did you notice that anywhere you travel on this planet, anywhere you go, you will find a cross? Big countries, small islands that can barely get enough clean water, but they will put a cross up. Why did they do that? What does Jesus mean to you personally? Maybe he's just a historical character, like Shakespeare. Maybe he's the first son of man to become clear on being son of God. What is he to you? It doesn't really matter what you've learned. Just check in tonight to see what you have allowed or assigned or decided, accepted, or know about this Jesus character. I went to Greece a couple weeks ago, and they said, hey, side trip. And they powered us over across the Aegean Sea and dropped us off in Turkey. No passport. I'm in Turkey with no passport. Well, it's on the boat. So, okay. We wandered in. They had a guide for us. And we went into Ephesus. Ephesus is this place in Turkey where it was, they had two of these amphitheaters where you could seat people. They didn't have electronics and stuff, so they carved a half dish shape out of the hill, and they put people very steep on stone seats, but it all curves around. The acoustics are fantastic. A person in speaking voice you're on the top row, 7,000, 12,000, 20,000 people in these things I saw, and you could hear the person speak. And teachers came from all over and taught, and entertainment, but actually it was more for information passing, and the government used it, and I thought, interesting. I digress. But Ephesus is where the mentioned in the Bible, and it's this crossroads. The Silk Road, you've heard of the Silk Road trade, and all the stuff from the east, spices and beautiful, it ended there. And the boats would come in from Europe and the west, and they ended their boat trip there. And the information crossed for a long time. So I ended up standing there. Wow, there's history here. There's some great history here. And the guide, who is this historian extraordinaire, and he saw these white faces and everything, he said, you guys are so American. He says, did you know? Just so that you get into this, he said, did you know? And in Turkey, they do the Quran, in a Muslim, a heavily Muslim country. And they did. He said, did you know that Mary, mother of Jesus, that name shows up more in the Quran than Muhammad? And she's buried on the hill behind you. What we think is her tomb, where she was, is buried on this hill behind you in Ephesus.
Well, that's what they say about in Jerusalem. They say she's buried there.
Ha! Oh, it must have taken those. Whoa, they're stealing. They stole her. So yeah, so how do you confirm that? I have no idea. But he had the opinions. He was buried in his country. Thank you very much.
It's a good tourist draw.
It's a good tourist draw. Yeah, yeah. And so, and also, nothing that Jesus ever said was written down. There's plenty of writing back then, chiseled in stone, okay? But it was always what he was said to have said and what people were.
What about the Gospel of Thomas?
Yes, happened much after Jesus passed. Was it recorded? Was that said to be recorded during his lifetime?
I thought it was.
You thought it was?
I thought it was, yeah, because Thomas was a lot.
A disciple.
Yeah, or not that. Another character who was in the vicinity.
Yeah. Well, the teaching spread out in a very big way, and there were attributions to the disciples that ended up being Gospels. And because the Gospels had so much in common, they were thought to be true. And that's how you knew it was a good Gospel that was being cited. But nonetheless, so all that's historical, and it's just interesting. And here we have a book in front of us today, 2,000 years later, that has the word Jesus in it. And here you are, living in this planet that's got the cross and the Jesus all over it. What? You care to share? And you can say pass if you're uncomfortable. I'm always uncomfortable talking about this because it doesn't matter. You know, I love talking about what Course means by salvation and forgiveness and miracle because that matters. Hmm. But with this Jesus topic, does not matter. It is quite beautiful, the idea that it came from this character. It's quite beautiful what it says about Jesus in here, but it's just not quite the core teaching. It just doesn't matter. But anyway, interested? What did Jesus mean to you?
Well, I think because I did not grow up with any religious teaching, mm-hmm. went to church sometimes on Christmas Eve or that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I And I think the reason I never wanted to go is I didn't believe what I heard about Jesus Christ dying for our sins. I knew it wasn't true.
Yeah.
I knew it wasn't true, so yeah. I just wasn't.
Yeah, that's, yes.
Exactly.
That one took me. I was raised Catholic. I went to a Jesuit university. My parents put me in there. And I stood up and argued with the priest about Jesus.
Yeah.
And about original sin. I said, no, that makes no sense to me. There's so many beautiful things that were attributed to Jesus in the New Testament. But that Old Testament, I could throw out easily. It's like, man, it's made up of all these different things. And the idea that Jesus died for our sins, that's not a loving God. Where's the love? I'm not interested in that story. Yeah.
Did they take you out?
Yeah. You know what he did? He said, you know, we can't take up class time to discuss this. However, he says, because you've got some interest in the class, let's meet next Tuesday night in the basement of St. Joseph's Hall. And we will discuss this. I will bring you some, because you got this collar on backwards. This guy's a pro. He says, I'll bring you some things, and I'll help you with this. Half the class showed up. I think more than half the class showed up to see what happens with this priest versus Andrew.
Smackdown.
Yeah, smackdown was going to occur. And we didn't meet just once. We met four times. And so he didn't smack me down the first night. And then by the end of that first night, second night, I think, some of the other Santa Clara students started trying to do a little smackdown too. I had no problem. By then, I was so empowered. I made it past the first night. The Spirit filled me, and I was like, no, there is love, and there's goodness, and if God was against us, none of us could survive. And, you know, I don't think you come in with sin. And I don't think God would sacrifice His Son in some trade for our faith. What? I can't even make sense of that story. And nobody can support that when you put him to it. It's just silly.
Sin being the author of more misery.
Yeah, more misery, and even sin being real.
But that's, so you were in part of Christianity, what was the faith again? That you were.
So that's Jesuit at a university.
So you were just in the wrong, I mean, because you know that there are factions of Christianity that believe exactly what you're saying.
Yes, yes.
In this book, but I mean...
Yeah, yeah. But,
you know.
That's why I ended up being Protestant. You know, I ended up going to the Protestant church. I found some young guy up there. I just love the way he took what out of the Bible and applied it to the today. It's way before course. And I love that. Showed up and I had a great time. And so, by the fourth night, this guy had been doing research and showing up. And I just stuck to my guns that there is love, and that's what we all have to be thankful for, that the truth, you know, that love is true. And he stopped the fourth night. He said, well, you know what? He says, and he come up. First I said he came just for the smackdown. But then he's turned, and by the fourth night he started looking for support for my argument. And he found it, as you just intimated. And he looked at some of that stuff. And he said, you know, perhaps you're right. Perhaps we made up fear. That's what I said. I said, I think it's the old days. You needed fear to get the farmer to stop stealing stuff.
Jesus.
That's what I said. That's probably where it came from. And we kept it. I don't think you need to keep it anymore. And that was my argument. You know, it's like sin, original sin. No. Anyway, so he said, perhaps you're right. And we all agreed to disagree with the other people who didn't. And that was it. That was it. But I'm with you. I'm so with you. And I never look back from that moment. That was really empowering for me as a human being and as a spiritual seeker. Mm-hmm. Those four night classes in St. Joseph's Hall. Yeah.
So I knew that God was love. And so that's the only way I ever thought of God.
Yeah.
And so in this book, the words bothered me when I first picked it up. Some of the salvation and sin and all those words was over. Trigger words from what I'd heard before.
Oh, the trigger words, the big words, yes.
About
atonement.
Dying on the cross for your sins.
Yes, yes.
Salvation and all these things.
Yes.
But when I started reading this, the beauty of the words and the truth, it just got my heart right away. I just knew it was true.
Wow. Yes.
Yeah, and then the iambic pentameter, I mean, that whole thing was obviously...
Yes, that blew
divinely.
Away. That blew away, Helen. Everybody know what that is? Iambic pentameter? Course in Miracles. So it turns out, this book that you have in your lap, about 60% of it actually, a great part of the second half of the workbook almost entirely, and I think it's like the last 9 chapters, but nonetheless of the text. So a lot of this book is written in something called iambic pentameter, which is a poetic verse used by Shakespeare for his sonnets, I think. And it's just a way of counting syllables. It's long, short, long, short, long, short, long, short, you know, in groups of 5. So an example is, I showed this to a Shakespearean professor, and I said, can you tell me about... And she said, she just happened to open up and said, well, here's an example right here. And so I never forgot that sentence. Its very nature is that it is not. Its very nature is that it is not. And so, and that's talking about the ego, right? And so, as you go through, once you get into part 2 of the workbook, if you're just for kicks, you can count out those paragraphs, count out the titles, and they're all 10 syllables, they're 5 syllables, they're 15 syllables, they all are iambic pentameter. And it's quite difficult to do. Even Shakespeare had to make up words so he could keep that meter. Any way you could memorize it for a play and stuff. It was a lot of uses you could use for this phrasing. But it was kind of beautiful, and it rings off right. And you'll notice that sometimes when you're reading a paragraph. You know, you can feel the poetic nature of it. He made up Faust and Wutst. And, you know, Shakespeare made up these words so that he could fit it. There are no words made up here. So
that doesn't presuppose supernatural origin. I don't think anything does.
And Helen loved Shakespeare. Helen loved Shakespeare.
So syllables and just sentence after sentence after sentence.
Just count them out. Big deal. Just spend a little time and make them all line up. I mean, just do it. We'll write one paragraph of that for us. Bring it in next week. That'd be very interesting. One paragraph of iambic pentameter.
Yeah, right. Does it have to be 10 sentences in that paragraph?
No, however many you want. However many you want.
I'll take one.
Start. Yeah, just make one. Start with one. That would be good. It has to make sense. Like, this makes sense.
Of course it would.
Oh, it doesn't matter.
You
know,
babble in private.
That's another thing. It just doesn't matter. You know, the fact that 60% of this is an iambic pentameter just doesn't matter, but it sure is fun. I thought Jesus was having fun with Helen.
Yeah, well...
me do that. I mean, that's so hard to do.
I know. I have trouble visualizing that. Jesus back, you know, 2000... plus years ago, sitting around talking in iambic pentameter.
Oh, I don't know if he talked in it.
But,
yeah.
From beyond the grave, dictating to some lady in New York, you know, or wherever she was.
You know, I all I know is that it really impresses academicians.
Well, the only reason I'm citing that is because to me it was so clearly divinely inspired. I mean, it's all divine.
Yeah,
that's all.
It for me, it ratcheted it up too. And Helen and Bill didn't even know what they were doing. He'd have her go back and fix words that she changed. She says, well, she'd argue with him, and she said, really, it's better, and probably was grammatically, but no, he was having fun, I think, and got his way for most of it. And when they figured that out, they started going backwards and counting and seeing how much was, and they blew them away. And I was kind of impressed too. I'm impressed. I'll do some of these lessons in the back of the book. And I'll think, man, is this a dense lesson. There's, I can't wait to cover this in class. You know, there's so much in here. And then I'll count it out. And I'll say, yeah, the whole thing's an iambic pentameter too. Right to the last word. I can't wait. I mean, it helps me too. It helps me. Especially if there's something that's difficult for me. And I'll count it out. I'll see, is there an error? You know, maybe there's an error in the scribing. And I'll go back to the Ur text. I'll double check. No, this is how it came through. And then I'll get it. Yeah.
Well, it was more on an emotional level anyway, that it just rang true to me.
Nice. Yes. Good. Beautiful. Yeah. Well, what does Jesus mean to you?
I'm just counting out lesson 351.
Yeah, that's right. It's like, wait a minute. Yeah. Yeah.
I think of a face and a voice. And my mind visualizing covers of some Paul Fleming books.
Ah, yes.
That face,
yes.
And there's a voice behind it.
Yes.
That's one. Second one is you know, the character, it's hard to talk about, you know, whatever, you know, like a real person. I mean, you know, it's a character. Character in the play who didn't know, who was born here, came in here not knowing who he was.
Yeah.
Figured it out.
Yeah.
And then went through the crucifixion to prove that death is not real.
Yeah.
But yet he's idolized by everyone who thinks death is real.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what's, you know.
Tough job, I think.
Yeah.
He took on a pretty tough job. And it, the book says, teach, in chapter 4, I think it is, we talked about the crucifixion, and it says, teach not that I died. Teach that I live in you. Yeah. Colleen, what does Jesus mean to you?
Let's see. It kind of goes together with my early introduction in the Catholic religion. And it was not at all comfortable to me. I did not believe the stories. Figured maybe somebody made them up, or if other people believed that, okay, but it seemed kind of weird to me. Religion was full of guilt and suffering. Standing in the cold outside the church in Chicago in little patent leather shoes, and you didn't wear pants or slacks, freezing, waiting for the service to begin. I was a skinny little kid. Just guilt-producing. And I'd see this picture of supposedly Jesus on the calendar with the two little kids, and they're crossing the bridge, and they had wings, and it was surrealistic, I think, and it was supposed to be all pleasant and good, and that wasn't the neighborhood or the family that I came from, so it didn't look like that. There weren't any special bridges, and I don't know, it was all a part of that, and I felt like I was supposed to believe this, and I couldn't dare say that I didn't. And everybody else was either believing or trying to believe, and I always felt that I was probably going to go to hell. I hoped not, and I went to catechism. I thank God that I didn't go to Catholic school. I had a friend who did, and it was horrible. But I went to catechism and went to confession on Saturday mornings, and I quit. I was 10 years old. I quit. I left. I went home. And I walked in the door, and my father was sitting there. And I thought, as I'm walking home, I fully expected a lightning bolt to come out of the sky and strike me dead because I quit. So I was already full of this. And I walked in, and my father is sitting there. And I thought, oh, now I'm in for it. He looked at me and said, what are you doing home? And I told him. And he said, and I was afraid of what he was going to do or say. And he looked at me and he said, I want you to remember one thing. What? What? It wasn't me who made you go to church. He was raised Catholic. He spent his whole life not believing, but going through it. And my mother had actually, when she married him, she had to become Catholic, go through all that involved. It was her idea, only I didn't know this. It was her idea that we go to church and we go to catechism. She went to church twice a year, Easter and Christmas. But we were supposed to do this and make our first home. Anyway, I could go on and on about this, but
yeah,
it was a horrible experience for me, and you know,
my mom thought it would be the best for the kids too if they were somehow.
I thought that I was supposed to believe that, so I really didn't. So when I finally said, you know, I don't believe this God stuff. Okay, if it works for other people, that's fine. It wasn't until I was in my 30s when I was explaining to a therapist some of the miraculous experiences that I'd had, and she said, "And you don't believe in a higher power?" I said, "Is that what that was?" She said, "I don't know. What do you think?" And I thought, well, let's see. It's an energy outside of me, not in my control, that's always there to protect me, and I don't conjure it up, and I can't do it at will, and I don't know when it's going to happen, but it takes care of me. I guess maybe that's the definition of a higher power. So it wasn't until then, it didn't come through catechism or the Catholic Church or going to Sunday school. It had to come from, it had to be proven to me. Okay, there's an energy outside of me, higher than me, not in my control. The Jesus thing? I don't know. So that's my take on it.
Very good. Thank you. Beautiful. Thank you very much. Speaking to us a lot of our experiences.
And I also heard that coming from the area he came from, he couldn't possibly have light skin and blue eyes.
Right.
So, I don't know.
Yeah, he couldn't have.
Right, yeah. Yeah, something wrong about that image.
It looks like an arrow, basically.
Exactly,
or black.
Yeah. Julie, what does Jesus mean to you?
I'm going to pass.
Sure. Bridget, you want to talk to us about Jesus?
I was raised Catholic, and it was fire, hell, and brimstone, and it was terrible. And so the images that mankind has filled, society with is just, I guess that's what first flashes through my brain.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot to move through that and just kind of like keep cleaning it off.
Yes.
And see that essence of Jesus. And
that's
what's really, then it strikes and it's like, oh my God, I can get there.
Yeah.
But what's kind of interesting is I do react to it when I talk to somebody about, I'm doing the course, this is so cool, this is amazing stuff. And they're like, well, what? And it's kind of like God comes up and Jesus kind of comes up, or, the psychotherapy. And I can just feel that energy, and it's just, it's mostly me. I just kind of clamor because I know people's reaction to it.
I'm clamoring now.
Forget it. No, never mind. I can't explain it in a neutral form. How do you become neutral to that?
Yeah.
And then realizing that what's really cool is this is my own thing. That I don't have to try to prove it or teach it or, anybody else. This is like for once in my life after 50 years of trying to help people, teach people, show people, heal people, all that.
Yes.
It's like, God, get over it already. So it's a cool thing, I get to that. I do. Jesus is amazing. It's just phenomenal. It's beyond what I can comprehend what had happened, all that transpires.
Yeah.
And the truth and the freaking lies. And it's just like history anyways. That's
all these stories.
Like,
it kind of reads like a correction. This is a section in it where it reads like a correction for a lot of these ideas and phrases. And he says, here's what I came to teach.
Yeah.
I love it's that. Like, whoa, yes.
And maybe that's what I see.
Yes, obviously.
Because it is. It's like, yes, right on. Yeah.
And this is for you.
Yes.
And he says, this message is for you who's reading it. And it's not for anybody else, because there's actually nobody else. When you get to what I'm putting down here, and you start picking up what I'm putting down, there's nobody else. And I'm talking directly to you as I would talk to myself. Because as you awaken, I awaken. That's how close to Jesus this idea of Jesus is to us. It is your deal. It's your deal. And I had to go through that same passage myself and recognize that I need to do this. I don't care how it sounds. I'm going to stop trying to tell people about this because I want to just continue. And I did. I stopped telling people what I was doing and speaking about trying to sell it or share it for years. And I just drank it in. And it just healed all these difficult ideas in my head, and it was right there with me every day, sometimes every hour of the day. I was not alone. I was empowered, actually. And so for that, I am grateful forever. Call it Jesus, fine. And now later, and I think I've been studying this now for what, 25 years?
25 years now I've been studying this book. And I would say that I would not be able to do what I'm doing right now and talk to you about Jesus until maybe 10 years ago, maybe less. I thought, leave it alone. I don't want to stir it up. I can barely do it tonight. Because I'm just, it's not, like I say, it's not important. I don't want anybody to run out the door because, oh no, it's a Jesus session now. You know? Because it isn't, right? It's not Jesus you would know, and it's 12 times in that anyway, right? But, so what happened to me, because you were so forthcoming, thank you, is that I began to own this book and the message, and I began to receive the gift from somewhere that I was actually taken out of going in the dark and I was put back in the light. I was actually, you know, the ego had its good hold on me, maybe as anybody else, and I needed permission to let go of that. And he says, you know what, turn the next page, I got it for you. And I did, I got permission go back to love. So I'm in. So now I have a relationship. I've heard that phrase, you have a relationship with you, as Jesus saved you. You have a personal relationship with Jesus as your Savior. I used to think, oh my God, did you read that on the back of a t-shirt when you signed up at the church? What are you guys all the same phrase? Get original. You're knocking on my door with these things. But now I get it. Now I get it. I'm there. I'm sick. Give me the t-shirt. I'm ready. I didn't get it. For all the time. And I didn't care. I didn't need to care. Because I was filled with love and light as I studied and used that word, Jesus. You know? But now it means a whole lot more. I can't even describe it.
I wanted to come in there because I do struggle with this conversation, but I struggle with it because of the inherent judgment within the sharing of the past.
Yeah.
And so on that point, I would like to share that for me, that was the healing that this book brought, because I rejected this book for an entire year that it tried to surface in my life because of the words and terms. And the healing was when I lost... those lost the charge for me.
Yes.
And I didn't know how much energy I was investing in rejecting.
Interesting.
So yes. I do struggle with this actually, because I think that pain that's there is very real, but it's like just another thing we can let go.
Yeah. I didn't want to drink the Kool-Aid. I want to be in a cult. And I started looking at Catholicism as like a cult. You guys are making up these stories left and right. You want me to do... I mean, I just didn't feel... I did not feel free and loving. And there's so much suffering, like you said, and sin and hell. Hell! Yeah, and I'm like, where is the love? I just couldn't buy it. And so I just look past it. Because the book was speaking to me fast and hard in my heart and mind. So I kept turning the pages and I kept working it. Then it started to work me, you know. As I began to see Jesus talk about himself in here and saying, you know what, they kind of got me wrong. Mm-hmm. I'm like, whoa. Then I've heard interviews of other people who would see a picture on the face of a book, and it, after having the face show up in their dream, and it was Ramana Maharshi. And they were sleeping and they saw this very clear picture. One person said that the guy showed up in their bedroom, opened his eyes, and there's this man, Indian looking man. It's like, shake that off. And then, you know, 6 weeks later, going through a bookstore, that's the man I saw. And it was that Ramana Maharshi book you see with his face on the cover. And several of those people who just randomly, I thought, well, that's just like Jesus showing up. Ramana Maharshi, Jesus, you know, that no need for Jesus to be any kind of a unique character. It would just be any character, and that would go from being fully isolated in ego to going back to now be fully awake in spirit. And so you want to take on a physical form, you take on a name, you want to try to work it. There's a section in the book called Light in the Dream that explains how you would do this. And if you so chose to care for your whole illusion of the world, knowing that it's an illusion, you're free to enjoy it. After all, you did it with the power of God himself. Everything you do is with the power of God. Even lie to yourself. You can do a really good job of pulling the blanket over your head if you want. After all, there's only one source, only one power. Yeah, it's been a hell of a journey for me. You know, I totally rejected it for years and years. I didn't need to, just ignored it. Kenny, you want to talk about Jesus?
Our family was Lutheran.
Ah, good.
So we went to church a lot. And there was prayers at night. Well, if I should die before I wake, I hope that my soul to take.
Yeah.
That one, we said that one a lot.
Yeah.
And took a little, so religion and be good, sin and all was a big part of my life for a long time. One benefit of religion is when I decided to go to college, and you needed a 2-point average to graduate. I never had a 2-point average until I found religion. Because it was easy to get a good grade.
Okay, you used it.
And so I was in a class with it was a preacher, and he said, it was just like 6 or 8 of us. And he said, "Do you believe in hell?" And everybody goes, "No, I don't believe in hell." And I was going like, "Well, I don't know. It's possible." But really didn't believe. And it took a long time to get away from what I thought I was supposed to be because of a God.
Yeah. Yeah. And all that church structure that says there's a hell. And there's a heaven, and there's a pearly gates, and you do things right, and there's sin, and there's forgiveness.
What part of it was in myself, I thought, well, I got to be clever to get away from this. So I told my dad I wanted to go to college, and if I could caddy at a golf course on Sunday, I could get 2 rounds in, and I could make 8 books.
Uh-huh.
That was my saving.
Yeah, you're saved.
Yeah.
Mark, what does Jesus mean when you hear that word?
Well, okay, so do you want me to tell you what Jesus means to me? Or
to you personally.
The book.
Yes. No, we're not in the book. We're going to cover the book. It's going to speak for itself. What does it mean to Mark? What does it mean to you now?
To me, it's like kind of like on par with Bigfoot.
Okay, good. good, yes.
And I think that, like, it's a fantasy.
Yes.
I have no, like, assuredness that he even existed.
Yes.
So it's in my mind that a concept, like a concept of this person, who
yes.
Other people say is really great. Okay?
Yes.
So
and they wanted it to be true so badly.
Right.
It made it true.
That it's and it's, I personally don't have an experience of Jesus other than this book.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So it kind of sets up a I don't know the right word. There's a disparity between what other people say. I'm curious why so many people on this planet believe that in this person. If I don't get it.
Yeah.
I don't get it. Why is it that, so I'm curious about
excellent.
That.
Excellent. There was a scientist, Strobel. Oh, no, it wasn't actually, it turns out he was a person who took a science class. Turns out, I learned recently, he was not actually a scientist pedigreed. He was just a science person. Took a science class, thought science made more sense than any religion he'd ever heard. And in science class, 1982 or whatever it was, they announced, they said, look, we can take the primordial gases from the beginning of the Earth and we can make amino acids by just closing them into a beaker and stirring it with a little heat. There's it's not life, but it's a basis of life. Hang out for a billion years, you're going to get...
Prove it.
You can get a frog.
You can kind of like...
You can prove that you don't need God. You know, you can just mix these chemicals here. And then eventually, maybe, you can get a frog and then an elephant, a tiger.
Life has a process.
Yeah, just let it work enough time. Here it is. So he said, good. I don't need God. Didn't want it anyway. And so he lived his life very well. Became very successful. And became the chief editor of the Post, I think. I think it was the Post. And he,
oh, yeah.
He married a woman who was also like him, science.
That's that movie that you were talking about.
That's the movie I was talking about.
Yeah, I saw that.
Did you see it?
Yeah, I saw it.
Yeah, The Case for Christ.
Yeah, it was interesting.
Yeah. And just to finish the story for the rest of you, real quick, she ended up choking in a restaurant pregnant, and a woman ran from the other side of the restaurant and Heimlicht her, and who happened to be a nurse at the local hospital. And she went to the hospice to thank him and says, don't thank me, thank Jesus. I wasn't even going to eat dinner that night. I wasn't going to your restaurant, but I heard go to the restaurant. You know what? I did. And then I, being a nurse, saved you. That just wasn't me. She says, what do you mean? How can you believe that? She says, I don't know. How can you not? I just told you what happened. She says, well, just come to my church if you're interested in more. I'm not going to sell this. So she goes to the woman's church and she gets religion. She hears it. She just felt in her heart open up with the earnest and honest of whatever happens in church. You know, some of these churches are pretty amazing when they start singing. It's like, whoa. And she went back for a second, third, fourth, and before she knew it, her heart was filled, and she went to her husband, who is this perfect scientist kind of guy. He says, honey, can we talk? He said, no! You know, you can't believe this. You can't be drinking that poison. You can't. You're going to ruin our relationship because I can't deal with that. I don't want to deal with that lie. It's just a story. It's Santa Claus. So he said, he loved his wife. He wanted to keep his marriage. And so he began to disappear at night. She thought he maybe was cheating. Maybe he didn't know. But he was going out doing research, and he eventually got newspaper to fund him to fly across the country and go interview people who could say that there's no Jesus, it's made up, it's a bunch of this. So the movie is a kind of a docudrama. Hmm. It's got actors, so it's well done, but it goes through the true story of what he went through to go prove that there ain't no Jesus.
You can't, you know, it's you can't just prove it.
Yeah, exactly.
And what's the point of trying to do that? I mean, the words in this book are speak for themselves.
Thank you. It doesn't matter if you believe in this Jesus thing. Yeah. Lillian, what would you say about Jesus?
Well, I was not brought up in any religion. My family was, history was Methodist on one side and Baptist on the other side, and we never went to church. Christmas or Easter or otherwise. Mm-hmm. So I read a book when I was 11 called The Magnificent Obsession. Mm. And I got my relationship with God through the book. So I've never really had a relationship with Jesus except through this book. My relationship has always been directly with God. Mm. What I thought was that Jesus was a man, still thinking actually, was a man who understood God from a very spiritual position, mm-hmm. point of view, and that he did everything he could think of to do, acting, etc., in order to get his message out. Mm-hmm. And what people did with his message was everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and he in the other scribe I told you about, John Mark Hammer, here's Jesus. And that book is very much Course in Miracles, but focused mostly on Christ's vision. And it's another big, expensive book. It's not as big as this. But one of the things you hear echoed throughout there is, I and my Father are one. Mm-hmm.
From chapter one, it goes. Yeah, that's the very first axiom.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He says, what you're talking to is the voice for God as God.
Yeah.
Would
whenever,
speak.
Whenever I hear the, yeah. I haven't run across the Lord Jesus in here yet.
Okay.
But the I part, I've always thought that was God talking.
Turns out, you're right. It's just a God, it's the God awareness that's fully now, since there is no ego, there's no separate identity. There's only one, and it's extension of God. You'll see that word in there, extension of God. You'll see, and that's what now we call Jesus, or the God that the I in there is an extension of God. Just of truth.
So one of the things I think about this book is that when Jesus is talking,
mm-hmm.
which we are told he's the one that did this,
mm-hmm.
when Jesus is talking, it's God telling him what to say.
Yeah, because your mind's still involved in the separation thing. That makes sense. It's fine. That's just fine. But I think you'll...
But
you'll,
I'm saying, because yeah. Jesus is as God,
yeah.
then if whoever wrote this book said it was Jesus talking to them, for me, that's the same thing as God is talking to
you. You know, that works fine. Works fine. You know, in a few years, we may have another discussion about this, and I'll be here to see if you see even more. But that works fine.
Does it matter, though?
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Okay.
You know what? It doesn't matter.
But my relationship with God has always been that.
Does it matter if you cross the bridge by walking right down the middle, right down the painted line, or just maybe walk the bridge like this, grasping the stanchion posts and eking along? Does that matter how you cross the bridge? Any way you get across the bridge, if your heart is involved in this awakening, you cannot stop. Like, I think Colleen was like, I'm stopping this Catholic thing. You still went on with the spiritual journey. You still went on with your awakening. Here you are.
It happened.
Yes.
Personal experience.
Doesn't Jesus say someplace in here
yes.
something about that, like you don't have to believe? I can't remember.
That's right. Yeah, page 2 in the workbook.
Uh-huh.
He says, I'm about to lay some stuff on you here. That's pretty radical.
Yeah.
I'm paraphrasing a bit. Yeah. And he says, you don't have to like it. You don't have to even believe it's true. But just try it and let it show you that it's true by how it works in you to bring you peace. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know what? That's the bottom line and it's the top line. That's the whole line. That's right.
If you go through this book, I mean, I'm not very far in the lessons yet, but if you think in terms of the lesson I want now is the mind of God does this, and is my mind that I think with,
mm-hmm.
well, then the mind of God is what Jesus thinks with.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore,
if there's only one mind.
There's only one mind, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
So that's why I don't get upset by using Jesus or whatever they use in here. I just think this is God talking.
You know, another one is the he-she thing. You know,
like what she said, she didn't want to use the word son.
Yeah, right, because it's hard to identify as a son, you know, and why did it say she every once in a while? Wouldn't it be kind? I mean, after pretty much 50% of us are females, and every male, you know, isn't that kind of, wouldn't it be nicer?
Yeah, one was written.
Yeah, 67.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was written in a certain time, but I wish Wendy was here because she totally went through that passage. And next time Wendy's here, I'll have her tell her story about becoming a son of God, because the gender went out the window. The whole gender is another ego separation. I'm done with it. She's a I'm not doing that. I'm not falling down that hole. I am here to wake up. And she realized that that made up with the ego was he, she. It's just another separation. Like, cool.
I think, you know, I mean, the bottom line to me is that I know from, you know, my own studies, experience, whatever, that the ego exists, and awareness, enlightenment exists, you know, and this book speaks to that whole dynamic.
Yes.
And so I experience the book more with my heart than I do trying to figure out what it is trying to say, because if I do that, it's like it's just not more trouble than it's worth.
Nice. Amen, brother.
Yeah.
It's the same way it got me into it. I look right past the source. I'm a very analytical, scientific guy. And I just let it talk to my heart. It was reaching right into my heart and pumping it. I was like, wow. I just skipped over that introduction of how it came, you know, channeling. But it was so powerful right away.
Yeah.
I'm in the same boat, right? And then I've awoken since then and warmed up quite a bit to the possibilities of voice of truth coming through. Call yourself Jesus, fine. Call yourself Ramana Maharshi, fine.
If you think, and as far as Jesus being the first, no, I think he was just the first one that acted out and tried to teach right away.
Yeah, so it turns out Jesus stepped out of time by the time he wrote this book. So he says, I control time and space now as part of your mind that's still connected to the truth. He says, so I'm the first, because he's awake as the first. Still using the name Jesus, but there is no time, see? For us to say that there was one before Jesus and then one slightly after is back into ego, looking to divide things up and explain and analyze. I love what you said, because that's also what hooked me. I was able to get past with my heart. And this knew my heart better than I did. It was a great experience.
I don't know what you're calling your heart, but for me it's a sense inside of a presence.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to describe your heart? Can you do that? Your heart versus your mind?
Well, you know, it's the things that it's beyond knowing. You know, it's something that you know to be true, but it's not something that you can necessarily just describe or think about. I know it's like there was a couple of weeks ago when we were reading. I was struggling with trying to understand it, and then I just kind of felt it. Mm-hmm. I felt the passage that we were reading, like what the meaning was. It was like it hit me in a gut level.
Mm-hmm.
And because I was trying to understand it, and then I stopped trying to understand it. Mm-hmm. And it made more sense to me, like kind of, you know, it's speaking like very directly, but in an indirect sort of way, which is bizarre, because
yeah.
The words are so kind of like if you're trying to understand it, like yeah. with your mind, it's so hard.
Yes.
But if
brain.
Yeah, with your brain, like
it's a
you
felt
know,
sense of truth.
Huh?
For me, it's a felt sense of truth.
Yeah, it's a felt sense of truth. Yeah.
It's a resonating.
Yeah, right.
It just
yeah.
resonates with
you. Yeah, right.
You don't know why you didn't even stop to figure it out in your head, but it resonates. It feels right. It mm-hmm. is right. As far as you know.
Yeah, it's beyond the words.
Yeah.
It's before the words. But you can't hit it with words.
Mm-hmm. And actually, if you try to figure it out too much, then you'll block it.
Yeah, you go right big into the head, and you go into this analytical, and then you don't feel it anymore. You're trying to think it.
You're trying to figure it out, then you kill it.
You go out of the heart yeah. and into the mind, or brain, how he was in. That's right. The Course calls itself a journey beyond words.
Yeah, I've had some experiences where I've been just grappling with, I don't get it. And then I just asked to get it.
Yeah.
And then I have the feeling of
yes.
it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wait and yeah. see what comes up.
Yeah, just wait, see what comes up. It's on page 90. He says, you know what, let me step back. I just want to be at peace. I'm not chosen peace, and I know I didn't choose peace, but I'd like to have peace. I'm paraphrasing again. Big time. And he says, you know what, why don't you do it, and I'm sure that you will, and you'll undo all my wrong thinking along the way, so I'm just going to just let you bring me back to peace, and I'll let you choose God for me in this circumstance. And that's on page 90 in a little prayer. It's just beautiful. And it is, that's a little surrender, and that's just, like he said
yeah. Well, that's what I love about the exercise. You don't need to understand them, and you don't need to believe them. You just need to do them. I
yeah.
love that direction.
Like, yes.
Great. Because when I try to understand them and pull them apart and see if I believe them, then I'm up here and not down here, and I'm not getting what I need at all.
Just like that. Mm. Yeah. And that somehow, with all these words, it can speak to the heart. It is a mystery. But doing the workbook is where I mean, the text is great, and I love the text, but the workbook blows my mind. It is such a communication, one lesson after the other, working like the instruments in an orchestra to deliver to me a message about my shifted identity, no need to go for fear. All these topics are covered in a way that just draws me in and leaves me in tears. What is this? That's why I keep studying it. What else can I say? You know, there aren't. You know, what's Jesus to you?
So, I'm kind of with Mark with the boogeyman and the Easter bunny and all of that. I'm Jewish by upbringing, so Jesus was never an important figure. But I never really believed any like Bible stories or anything, but I didn't really care, because to me, always being someone who's been a seeker, it's all about like how it made me feel. So I've been in religious services that make me feel connected and holy, and I don't give a darn what they're saying. I just like the feeling, you know, and I can do that. And I've gone to different services for different religions and gotten that in many of them. And it doesn't matter. I don't care who, you know, even like in the Hindu religion, and they have all the icons of the different gods, and Judaism, it's like, oh, you can't have more than one God. I'm like, none of that matters to me. It just matters, like, do I feel God when I'm in this situation, you know? And I've been able to, across many situations and in many religions, but then there's some things about a lot of them that become an obstacle for me, you know, like in some of the like Hindu religions, they put all this emphasis on like a living person who's going to be the translator, and like pray to that person, and that didn't feel right to me. And in the Jewish religion, you know, God kills babies and all kinds of stuff, and that doesn't seem right to me. And and on and on, and you know, and what Colleen was saying, what you were saying about, you know, our parents wanting to give us something. Like, I did that with my kids. When my kids were born, I was like, oh, we're all going to go back to temple, and we're all going to, because I want to give them that feeling that I've been seeking for, right? Yeah, and I never knew where to find it, but I sure wanted them to have it, too. So off we all go in our patent leather shoes to the synagogue. And nobody wants to be there, and they're crying and bored and whatever, and I'm forcing the issue because I want them to find what I'm looking for, because if they find it, then I'll feel good or something like that.
At least they can use that to pass on to your children the best. Yeah. Give a chance.
Yeah. And what's been amazing to me about the course is that it's also really come to me that, like, my peace is going to come not from making people outside of me find what I want. Like, I don't know where I got that twisted logic, but I kind of did. And it relates to religion, and religious institutions, you know, they have like family services. They try to make it so that you all come together, but I feel like it's really a personal thing when you're searching for connection, and you can't take your husband or your kids and put them in a thing and make them find it. They're going to find it however they find it.
Turns out it's really personal.
Yeah.
They do that. I mean, in like the Midwest, in some town, little town, everybody, you have to be, you know, go to church. And,
we don't want any sinners in this town. But that's where on the way, on the coast. On the coast, we figured
that's
it out.
That's what you were doing. And
we only want admitted sinners.
But your intention was to be a good mother.
To be a good mother.
Introduce them and
clean their feet and get their hair cut.
Yeah.
And make sure they're in clean clothes and get them to church.
Well, no, the idea was to help them find that connection. But I'm learning now people have to find that on their own, in their own time, in their own way, because that's what happened for me.
Yeah, beautiful.
I heard a horrible story about a church in San Joaquin Valley, big one, like 3,000 or 4,000 people. And the minister stood up and said, okay, women, I don't want to you know, you're not part of this, I'm talking to your husbands. And what he said was, we're having a woman's seminar, and guys, I want you to make sure your wives go.
That's funny.
I thought, oh, jeez.
What does Jesus mean to you, Brother John?
Jesus H. Christ, Andrew, that's a tough one. He's a face. He's a face of a greater entity. And so it's not really something I can answer. With any kind of assuredness. It's just like we are also the face of something greater.
Yeah.
So what we are presenting to the world is just something that's going to change anyway.
Yeah.
And so it's almost pointless to even try to describe what we think we are and what we think Jesus is.
Yes.
Well, we know for sure that it's a force, I don't know if that's the right word, it's an entity that implies change to a greater degree. Through an ascension, an attainment of levels of enlightenment unto God.
Yeah, and you're on that escalator.
Yeah,
I'm with you. I had to stop the other day. All of us have hunger for that. I think it's true. And I in my meditation just last week, I think it was, I had this thought. I said, "Wow, everybody I know." And I want them to be like I know them. I want to know them really well, and then you stay just like that. And everybody who knows me says, Andrew, I just want to get to know you so that I know you. And they really want me to stay just like that. Whereas I want to change in ASAP, personally. I want to enlighten, awaken, be more free. I want to explore what other powers are available for me in the either dream or reality, whatever you want to take. But I really believe now, and I know that with my mind, I can follow in the footsteps of this Jesus character. And that's what I think he is, my older brother.
You know, Adi Ashanti.
Yeah, sat with him for a couple of years.
Yeah,
myself.
I mean, he says that you're already enlightened. Right?
Yeah.
And it's basically you just follow who you already are.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to seek, you don't have to find anything, it's already there.
Yeah.
That's right, isn't that what's...
Well, yeah, that's part of a Buddhist teaching.
Yeah.
That you are the Buddha. You tend to deny it, but the same Course in Miracles.
Yeah.
You're denying it.
Exactly.
You are it.
Exactly, you're already it.
The Course in Miracles says you're on a journey without distance.
Yeah.
But you think it's a big distance, so let's treat it that way. How about 365 work for you? 365 lessons for everybody. Because you need some time and space to work it out. That's what you believe in. I'll give it to you. Here's a book. Yeah. It's so simple. Buddhism, of course, really, really tight that way. He's a Zen teacher.
Yeah. Right. It's just tailored for us.
It is. Yes.
It's like it could be another teaching in another way, not based on temporality. It would be something else would be just as valid.
Amen, brother. But we believe in temporality. So let's use what we believe in.
Does it say someplace in here, or am I thinking of Church of Religious Science, that says, that other religions say the same thing? Does it say this in the Course?
Yes, it says there are 1,000 paths.
Right,
And it's just one. It says of itself, this is just one of thousands of paths that all, of course, have the same goal.
Yes.
You bet. Okay. You bet. Okay. Absolutely does.
I was very attracted to it through Gary Renard in the getting through the rat wheel of reincarnation.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's like I'm so done with the same humanity, consciousness, whatever. And I don't know too many people that have really looked at choosing.
Yes.
Not coming back.
Yeah.
There are other options to explore. And if that's what got me was like, wow.
You bet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you know, whether it was through Gary or that's what led me to the book was like, Well, I'll check it out.
Nice.
Yeah. You know, so.
Yeah. And the Wheel of Samsara, you know, the taught, in other words, and the Course says, you know, you will just continue to do this. And it does say 1,000 years in here. You know, you could save 1,000 years. Wait, that's more than one lifetime. 1,000? Nobody does 1,000 years. What are you talking about? You could save 1,000 years. You say, and you know what? Because nothing, because of what you are as an extension of God, nothing will stop you from doing whatever you want to do. So if you want to continue to reincarnate and keep trying harder and harder, hey, more power to you, kid. He says, but if you're done and you know who you are, it's time to wake up without fear. It's the easiest way. And that's what the book is right now. We're going to be faced with a choice. Go back in a body and take care of your kids, because some of them will still be alive when you go. But you'll have this choice to make. You know, be their kid. Guess what? You could... well, we'll see how what your mind is doing at that point.
If you decide to just check out, is there any selfishness implied by that decision?
Yeah, there's going to be guilt implied by that decision, and if you don't do your Course in Miracles. Because you made this a place of guilt in order to hold it together as the dream that it is. And there's no evil here, there's no sin here. It's just what we do. It's what we have done with part of our mind. Fractionated it and played it in these cyclical things. But some of us are interested in alternatives. And I've never seen a book of all the ones I've looked at that went more to the heart, to the radiant, to the radical, which is another word for root of the matter. This is a radical teaching. It goes to the root of my belief in separation. And that I would even be held here in a body for anything more than my choice. So it says it in black and white, page 448. It says, end of this foolishness that anything could happen to the Son of God outside of his control, period. It's just one of those sentences dropped in there. And it gets supported and supported. When you're ready for it, you will hear it, tears will flow, and you'll say, yes. It's your Holy Spirit talking to you. So let's take a look on... We have enough time just to read this last paragraph. We may as well read the last two paragraphs, because it kind of talks like Jesus is talking to you. Look at 413, paragraph 7. The text, paragraph 7. And Carol, when you're ready, would you read that paragraph for us?
From your holy relationships, truth proclaims the truth, and love looks on itself. Salvation flows from deep within the home you offered to my Father and to me. And we are there together in the quiet communion in which the Father and the Son are joined. O come, ye faithful, to the holy union of the Father and the Son in you, and keep you not apart from what is offered you in gratitude for giving peace its home in heaven. Send forth to all the world the joyous message of the end of guilt, and all the world will answer. Think of your happiness as everyone offers you witness of the end of sin and shows you that its power is gone forever. Where can guilt be when the belief in sin is gone? And where is death when its great advocate is heard no more?
Okay, so that was addressing a different topic. So, Walt, would you go back and read 6? It's the one I was looking for, paragraph 6.
Let me be to you the symbol of the end of guilt, and look upon your brother as you would look upon me.
This is this Jesus dude.
Forgive me all the sins you think the Son of God committed, and in the light of your forgiveness, he will remember who he is and forget what never was. I ask for your forgiveness, for if you are guilty, so must I be. But if I surmounted guilt and overcame the world, You were with me. Would you see in me the symbol of guilt or the end of guilt? Remembering that what I signify to you, you see within yourself.
It's very, very personal. what I signify to you, you see within yourself. This is the part of the mind that went, that surmounted the world. I would like to surmount the world. I too would like to have a choice whether I come back or not. I would. I would just like to surmount the world so that I can do that. I may decide to come back and live it up once I'm free. Yes?
I have a question.
Yes.
How come I've never heard of this before? Why isn't it advertised?
What?
The Course in Miracles. Or
probably because what we're talking about tonight.
But I mean, you hear about every other religion.
Yeah.
I never heard about this.
There is no church for A Course in Miracles. There is no fund or money for A Course in Miracles except to publish the book and translate it.
There's no priest. There's no organization.
There are no priests. There's no leader. There's no organization. There are only popularizers and people willing to print the book.
Yeah.
It doesn't have... It's not a religion.
But I'll go on CNN and talk.
Yeah, you'd be great! You would be great on CNN!
So people aren't going to find it unless, you know, maybe the time is right, they find it. Like, I found it.
It was on Oprah.
Yeah, Oprah did a lot.
Marianne Williamson... Yeah, went on Oprah Winfrey. Yeah, and that was huge in the 90s. And she's a big popularizer. And of course, Miracles, boom.
Marianne Williamson.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And
okay, where was I at?
People think she wrote the book.
Oprah Winfrey?
Still. No, Marianne Williamson.
Oh.
Oprah Winfrey is a Course in Miracles student.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. And she kind of said, hey.
All right, cool. I used to watch her. I never heard her mention it. Okay.
Yep. And it became unpopular with... It became difficult for her to speak about religion. She ended up making her own separate spirit channel just for those who are interested in spiritual stuff. But she ended up having to divide that out of her, what she talks about, not what pays the bills for Oprah. Anyways, Marianne Williamson is a wonderful popularizer of A Course in Miracles, changed her life, wrote some great books about it, A Course in Miracles. She herself, to her credit, to this day, I heard on the radio just... I don't know, it's been probably 2 years. But she said, look, she said, I am not a great Course in Miracles student. She says, I love this book. It helps my life. I'm not the best at it. I still have a lot of work to do. And then she'll launch into, if you ever go see her, she'll be great for 15, 20 minutes, and then she'll jump into politics in the world. And, you know, that's where her head is. But still, she loves the book. She's really great at popularizing it. But that's as close as we've come to somebody taking it worldwide.
She gives a lecture every Tuesday night that you can get on your computer.
Oh, very good.
And it's pretty fantastic.
Does it stick with Course?
Yeah.
Okay.
You said, what was your question?
Does it stick with Course in Miracles?
Yes, and the one that she did Tuesday night, she definitely was talking about Trump and everything, but she totally brought the course
in. She did,
Nice. Yeah, all about, and it was really powerful.
All right, good.
So I was really curious to know if you could get those on YouTube.
Or nice, because that's what I listened to, and that's where she... But I should listen in again, maybe it's more. Yeah, what'd you think?
Well, I've listened to her too, but I've got a different take on it. I mean, I think it's kind of like...
You know what? I'm going to cut off Mary Mullinson because we're into the meeting. So we'll talk about her later. But let's stick with Course for now because I want us to get us through this last paragraph, which we just did. Right? Did we?
We did seven and then we did six.
Okay. All right. Right. So now let's do eight just so we can finish the section for next week. And then if you're interested, I would like to have us also read I Will Not Interrupt. But something from the manual for teachers.
I'm
really trying. Okay, so who's up? Colleen?
Where are we? Well, right,
what page?
This is page 414, paragraph 8.
414, paragraph
8.
I think it's Colleen.
Is it Colleen?
Yeah.
Is that Colleen?
Yeah. Yeah,
you think it's Colleen.
Yeah.
Okay,
414, paragraph 8.
Yes.
Forgive me your illusions and release me from punishment for what I have not done. So will you learn the freedom that I taught by teaching freedom to your brother and so releasing me. I'm within your holy relationship, yet you would imprison me behind the obstacles you raised to freedom and bar my way to you. Yet it is not possible to keep away one who is there already. And in him it is possible that our communion where we are joined already, will be the focus of the new perception that will bring light to all the world, contained in you.
Contained in you! It's so personal. Okay, now, there's our last couple of minutes. Flip to page 58 in the back of the book, Manual for Teachers.
And so I don't. Back of the book?
Yeah, back of the book, Manual, page 58. Manual, page 58. And just so that we don't end up holding anybody over, I'd like everybody, if you can possibly stay for a few minutes, we won't have a meditation. We'll use this as our meditation so that you can hear this, hear the Course speak.
I don't find page 58.
Okay, yeah, because you have the third edition, so you will find 58. It starts over, the numbers start over four times in this book.
Yeah, I noticed. Okay.
Yeah, so, but look at the top of the page.
I mean, it's about that far in.
Yeah, and look at the top of the page where it should say Manual for Teachers. It'll say all sorts of other things on the top of the page as these.
Okay, I found it.
All right, sweet.
Does Jesus have a special place in
you? You got it.
Okay.
Rocket.
I'm reading it?
You're reading it.
Oh.
One paragraph each.
The top. Does Jesus have a
special place? You already
read? Yeah.
Okay, you're fired.
I already read.
Bridget, you're up.
Oh, right. Left.
God's gifts can rarely be received directly. Even the most advanced of God's teachers will give way to temptation in this world. Would it be fair if their pupils were denied healing because of this? The Bible says, ask in the name of Jesus Christ. Is this merely an appeal to magic? A name does not heal, nor does an invocation call forth any special power. What does it mean to call on Jesus Christ? What does calling on his name confer? Why is the appeal to him part of healing?
When A Course in Miracles says healing, it's healing of your mind. It does affect your body often. Now, I hear some great stories from Course students. Fun. Still, it does not change what this book says about itself. It's not about form. This is a spiritual journey. And anyway, so healing is of the mind. Please continue. From separation. That's the only thing we're healing from. Please, continue. I mean, Kenny.
I'll read one sentence.
Okay, thank
we
you.
We have repeatedly said that one who had perfectly accepted the atonement for himself may heal the world.
Mm-hmm. What it says.
That's as far as I'm going.
Okay, then. Yeah. I mean, Mark, you take over.
Indeed, he has already done so. Temptation may recur to others, but never to this one. He has become the risen Son of God. He has overcome death because he has accepted life. He has recognized himself as God created him, and in doing so, he has recognized all living things as part of him. There is now no limit on his power, because it is the power of God. So has his name become the name of God, for he no longer sees himself as separate from him.
That speaks to what Louie, you were talking about. It is. Now he is the, as John was talking about, it's the face of God in a place that needs faces. So you're right, it's God. You're reading the words of God. Let's continue.
What does this mean for you? It means that in remembering Jesus, you are remembering God. The whole relationship of the Son to the Father lies in him. His part of the sonship is also yours, and his completed learning guarantees your own success. Is he still available for help? What did he say about this? Remember his promises and ask yourself honestly whether it is likely that he will fail to keep them. Can God fail his Son? And can one who is one with God be unlike him? Who transcends the body has transcended limitation. Would the greatest teacher be unavailable to those who follow him?
The name of Jesus Christ as such is but a symbol. But it stands for love that is not of this world.
Would you just reread that sentence for us again?
Okay.
Just because.
The name of Jesus Christ as such is but a symbol, but it stands for love that is not of this world.
Thank you.
It is a symbol that is safely used as a replacement for the many names of all the gods to which you pray. It becomes the shining symbol for the Word of God, so close to what it stands for that the little space between the two is lost the moment that the name is called to mind. Remembering the name of Jesus Christ is to give thanks for all the gifts that God has given you. And gratitude to God becomes the way in which He is remembered. For love cannot be far behind a grateful heart and thankful mind. God enters easily, for these are the true conditions for your homecoming.
Beautiful. Thank you. Brother John?
Oh. Jesus has led the way. Why would you not be grateful to Him? He has asked for love, but only that He might give it to you. You do not love yourself, but in His eyes, your lovingness is so complete and flawless that He sees it in it an image of His Father. You become the symbol of His Father here on earth. To you, He looks for hope because in you, He sees no limit and no stain to mar your beautiful perfection. In His eyes, Christ's vision shines in perfect constancy. He has remained with you. Would you not learn the lesson of salvation through His learning? Why would you choose to start again when He has made this journey for you?
No one on earth can grasp what heaven is, or what His one Creator really means. Yet we have witnesses. It's to them that wisdom should appeal. There have been those whose learning far exceeds what we can learn, nor would we teach the limitations that we have laid on us. No one who has become a true and dedicated teacher of God forgets his brothers. Yet what he can offer them is limited by what he learns himself. Then turn to one who laid all limits by and went beyond the farthest reach of learning. He will take you with him, for he did not go alone, and you were there. You were with him then, as you are now.
This course has come from Him because His words have reached you in a language you can love and understand. Are other teachers possible to lead the way to those who speak in different tongues? And this is the part I was trying to remember before.
Actually. Nice.
Excuse me. Are other teachers possible to lead the way to those who speak in different tongues and appeal to different symbols? Certainly there are. Would God leave anyone without a very present help in time of trouble, a Savior who can symbolize Himself? Yet do we need a many-faceted curriculum, not because of content differences, but because symbols must shift and change to suit the need. Jesus has come to answer yours. In Him you find God's answer. Do you then teach with Him? For He is with you. He is always here.
Beautiful. Thank you. Yes. You notice that whole thing is written in the third person.
That's right.
Okay. Well, let's have a circle if you don't have to go. Because I really like to have a little circle to close it off. Because we've talked about something pretty special personal here tonight. Take a deep breath. You are not alone. You can't be alone. The whole idea that you could be alone is what separation is in the ego. So you find yourself asking these questions and following your heart. A heart which does not lead to separation, but that is the path that leads to the awareness of one and of what love really is. The love trying to come back into your awareness from a journey into separation. Time, space, and bodies. So we just put a name on it. We'll call it Jesus. Jesus is this example of the mind who said, I am going to blow this pop stand and go all the way, and nothing can stop me. And with only those thoughts was the awareness and the awakening that now has led to us touching our hearts. It's just a symbol. It is a symbol. But this is a symbol that can lead us away from any kind of darkness in our lives. Just knowing that you're not alone. Just knowing that you're not alone. Where does that thought come from? Where does that heart come from? Where does that dedication to love come from? That's what he asked. I know it. I can feel it. I just don't have the words. So bring it on. And we call that Jesus. That's all. And then he says, well, once you get there, you will have a Christ appended to your name. And it will be Kenny Christ and Mark Christ. All Christ means
sounds
is...
like televangelists.
All it means is vision. All it means is that you now see no longer from, as a human, a limited human, that will struggle every single day. No longer that, but you have vision that sees through the limits. See? And now you join yourself as an extension of God. It's, as I said, right there in the page we just read. It's already in you. You don't see it. He says, but I do. Thank you for joining me tonight, Paul. Amen.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Thank you. Yeah.